You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You may know him as the professor who went against every forecast and predicted President Trump's victory in 2016. Alan Lichtman has a knack for predicting every presidential election since 1984. Actually, it's a formula. He accurately called this one in favor of Joe Biden based on his 13 keys. So it's wide open territory here. What do you think of polling, of recounts, electoral college, lawsuits? What are you seeing play out in this transition? We're at 800-642-1234 to join in. Alan Lichtman is a distinguished professor of history at American University. His latest book is called Predicting the Next President, The Keys to the White House 2020. Alan, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Great to speak with you again.
Well, your prediction machinery is holding up just fine. But here's the thing, Alan, more Americans voted in this election than in any other in more than a century. 65% of the voting eligible population cast ballots, and that will increase as more votes are tabulated. What just happened? What do you think of that?
Well, my system retrospectively goes all the way back to 1860 in the horse and buggy days when Abe Lincoln was elected. So it actually covered the highest period of turnout in American history, which was the late 19th century. At times, turnout was well over 70%. I think what we're seeing this time is, quite frankly, a reaction to President Trump. The fundamentals of my theory, the keys to the White House, is that American presidential elections are essentially referenda, votes up or down on the governing of the party holding the White House. I don't look at polls, punditry, or the day-to-day events of the campaign. That was the basis of my prediction of a Biden win way back in early August, and I think that is the basis of this extraordinary turnout, which, by the way, is an incredible tribute to the people of Wisconsin and the people of this nation to turn out in such record numbers for a modern election in the midst of a pandemic is an extraordinary tribute to our democracy. And I think it's really important to say that at a time when the president of the United States has smashed all precedent to a dangerously and falsely attack the integrity of our elections and our democracy. And I think what we saw playing out in this election was very powerful pro and anti-Donald Trump sentiment driving turnout for both those who voted for and those who voted against him.
Well, in the name of democracy, how far will President Trump take things as the election has not gone his way? What are you seeing there in not conceding and in not allowing this transition to function normally?
Look, I'm 73 years old. I go back to the Eisenhower administration. And as an historian, I've studied every presidency since that of George Washington. And what we've witnessed since this election from Donald Trump is the worst moment in the history of the American presidency. And I say that very advisedly. You know, his enabler, Mitch McConnell, says, oh, it's not unusual what Donald Trump is doing, filing dozens of lawsuits, making outrageous claims of voter fraud, impugning his opposition and our election system. McConnell is wrong. It's not only unusual, it has never happened before. Even Richard Nixon, who had some good reason to challenge his hairbreadth loss to John Kennedy in 1960, didn't do it. He didn't sponsor lawsuits. And in fact, he conceded and gave a very uplifting speech, advancing, not trashing our democracy. What Trump is doing is absolutely precedent-shattering in a dangerous way. It harkens not to anything in American history, but to some of the worst moves of dictators in places like Belarus and other autocratic regimes across the world. And it threatens to do permanent damage to the integrity of our democracy, in part because Trump isn't going anywhere. he's not going to barricade himself in the White House and call on the Proud the Proud Boys to keep him in office, but he's going to keep alive this attack on democracy, this perpetual round of grievance, this unending chorus of claims that I was really cheated and I was a legitimate president. You could hardly imagine something more dangerous to the integrity of our democracy. It's the big lie, but the big lie works. 70% of Republicans believe that Trump was cheated out of the election, despite not a scintilla of evidence to prove that.
We're talking with Alan Lichtman, who's a distinguished professor of history at American University, and he's called Presidential Elections. He's unpacking 2020 for us as he looks at presidents through history. Join in with your insights, what you would like to ask about this time in America and what history can tell us. 800-642-1234. Alan, you know, millions of Americans who voted for President Trump, will they buy into the false narrative of a stolen election? And if so, what are the consequences to our society, to our democracy?
You know, the big lie is the favorite tactic of autocrats across history. Say something often enough, loudly enough, and people will come to believe it, particularly people who might have had some predilection to believe it in the first place. So when Hitler began to spread his lies about the Jews in Germany, people already had something of an anti-Semitic predilection, so it was easy to believe the big lie. And let's not forget, Trump made the same claims about the 2016 election, claiming he was really cheated out of a popular vote victory because 3 to 5 million illegal voters miraculously appeared on election day, all voted for Hillary Clinton and equally miraculously disappeared. And a good chunk of his followers believe that. And he has been spinning this narrative that the deep state and the media are out to get him. They're going to steal the election from him. And lo and behold, he loses and continues to perpetrate that big lie. And unfortunately, 70% of Republicans seem to believe it. And this has the most profound impact on our democracy.
I want to ask you about one of your keys, charisma. I'm curious what you thought of Biden's victory speech to the nation last Saturday night.
You know, Biden is not known as a great orator. I thought he outdid himself. I thought that was about as good as Biden could be, and he struck all of the right notes about trying to bring Americans together, about being the president of all Americans, and trying to restore a degree of normalcy to our democracy, which we need so badly.
We have American University presidential historian Alan Lichtman as we discuss the state of politics in America and the history of presidential elections, of transitions. After 2016 and 2020, do you still pay attention to polling? Do you think polls should get as much attention and airtime as they do in lead up to elections? And if not, what should be discussed instead? Were you surprised by the results of this election, or is this election not over for you? Join in, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a minute with Alan Lichtman here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're spending the hour with American University distinguished history professor Alan Lichtman is here. He says previous presidential candidates who have lost elections have accepted the results with dignity and respect for American democracy. Not so this time, as President Trump refuses to concede and his administration refuses to acknowledge Biden's victory, effectively blocking classified briefings. What are your thoughts on that? Should Republicans put pressure on the White House to accept the results? How would you characterize the situation in our country? 800-642-1234. And we have American University History Professor Alan Lichtman as our guide for the hour. Let's bring in Chris, who's joining us from Milwaukee with thoughts. Chris, hi.
Hi. I've been thinking that that instead of going forward, that the president was probably going to have to fight jail, prison for himself and his family. I thought all these things that he couldn't be prosecuted for because he was president are going to be prosecutable as soon as he leaves office. I myself personally thought that's why he's not leaving. I'll take responses off the air. Thanks.
Alan, what do you make of that and the federal lawsuits against him?
Chris makes an excellent point. Donald Trump is going to have a very difficult post-presidential stint because he will no longer be protected by the prerogatives of his office. He could be prosecuted in New York State by state officials, and no federal pardon would cover that. It's not clear he could pardon himself anyway, and he could be prosecuted by the federal Southern District of New York. He has hundreds of millions of dollars in loans coming due. We don't know if he has the money to pay them. He faces a host of civil suits without the protections of his office, including a civil suit by E. Jean Carroll, who claims that Donald Trump raped her and that she has DNA evidence. You know, he's talking about running again in 2024. There's at least an outside chance he'd have to run from prison.
Let's bring in Frank in Liberty. Hi, Frank.
Hi there, longtime listener. I'm an independent, and it just seems like the level of partisanship displayed in the media, this station and network included, is just ridiculous and off the hook. And you're adding fuel to the fire to legitimize, you know, Trump's claims that, you know, there's something wrong. I mean, they
Whoa. We're not legitimizing that. Not at all.
They censored it. Yes, you are. I'm an independent man. I vote for whoever I feel like. I don't belong to a party.
Well, Frank, you had a question about Twitter, and you wanted. Yeah. So what would you like to say about Twitter?
Yeah, they censored the president on election night right there. I mean, that's what is the value in this? If he's such a buffoon, let the man speak and give himself enough rope. And which he does, you know, quite handily.
Right. Okay, Frank, I want to let Alan jump in here. As Frank is saying, you know, he was censored through Twitter, but yet Twitter has been his forum to get all of his points across.
He was only censored because of gross and dangerous misinformation. The president has plenty forums to get his points across. He has gotten his points across loud and clear across America. And as I said, 70% of Republicans believe his falsehoods. President's problem is not that he lacks a forum. The president's problem is he doesn't tell the truth.
You were very concerned leading up into this election about misinformation, disinformation, and foreign interference. What are your thoughts now?
Well, I'm not sure about the degree of foreign interference. It's not as blatant and as obvious as it was in 2016 when we had all of this dissemination of stolen Democratic material released through WikiLeaks and sadly covered by the press. Haven't seen that this time, but we haven't investigated exactly what the degree of foreign interference is in 2020. I have to say I am absolutely heartened by the fact that both Republican and Democratic elected officials across America, bar not a single state, have said this was one of the fairest, smoothest, and successful elections in the history of the country. That's the real narrative, not the false narrative that the president and his enablers are trying to spread that is so dangerous.
Alan Lichtman is with us, distinguished professor of history at American University, as we look at the future of our country, taking your thoughts on it and what you've seen since Election Day. 800-642-1234. Catherine is joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Catherine.
Hello, how are you?
Hi, doing well. Go ahead.
So just to sort of piggyback on the comment just made about outside influence, we don't know that that's not still happening with this current president. And so my comment really was about Mitch McConnell being part of perpetuating these lies. It is totally dangerous, and he needs to be held accountable for that part of it as well.
What do you make of that, Ellen, and the role? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. You know, I'm paraphrasing an old saying, evil exists because good men decide to do nothing. It's not enough to do nothing. Those Republican enablers, including Mitch McConnell, are allowing the president to so dangerously undermine the integrity of our elections and our democracy. I really worry whether we're ever able to truly come together again if Trump remains a force and continues to spread this lie, these lies and their vitriol. Look, the Republicans and Democrats are not going to agree on most issues. That's fine. That's healthy in our democracy. But as the late Republican President Gerald Ford said, we can disagree without being disagreeable. In other words, we can disagree in the issues without thinking the other side is somehow un-American and immoral. And sadly, uniquely in American history, we have a president who presents that view of his opposition as illegitimate. And the idea of a legitimate opposition is one of the bedrocks of our democracy.
Let's bring in Jacob now in Madison. Jacob, hi. What would you like to say about the pandemic?
Good morning. I think Mr. Trump needs to be held accountable for having his super spreader events maniacally before the election. The COVID numbers are rising rapidly, especially here in Wisconsin. And I think he needs to be held accountable for that.
It's an excellent point. And in my 13-key system, the reason that he lost this election was, in fact, his failed response to the pandemic, which cost him two of my 13 keys, two critical keys that led to his defeat, the short-term economic key because of the recession and the long-term economic key because of the negative growth, and it contributed to the social unrest key. So Donald Trump is paying a price for his utterly inadequate response to the pandemic. But sadly, even after the election, he continues to do nothing. He hasn't even addressed directly the pandemic while he's tweeted out, you know, God knows how many dozens of tweets with his grievances, his complaints, his insults. The pandemic is surging and the president is fiddling.
I want to ask you about incumbents that have quite the upper hand in an election. They have the name recognition. They have the Oval Office, the fundraising, the campaign base. They've got, you know, a lot riding on them. But there's something you talk about, risk aversion and the voter. What do you see there when the incumbent doesn't win?
Well, when the incumbent doesn't win, it's because of the record of the incumbent. Donald Trump made a fundamental mistake when he was confronted with challenges of the pandemic and the cries for social and racial justice. He knew the dangers of the pandemic. We know that from Bob Woodward's interviews. He understands race issues in America. And yet, instead of responding substantively to these issues, he reverted to his 2016 challenger playbook and thought he could talk his way out of them. And, of course, that didn't work for the nation and didn't work for his reelection. Ironically, this is the great irony of the Trump presidency. If instead of trying to talk his way out of them, which he thought helped him politically, if, in fact, he had dealt in a real way with these crises, he would have been reelected.
Do you feel pretty strongly about that?
Yes, because his failed response to these challenges cost him three of my 13 keys. Going into 2020, he only had four keys down. It takes six keys to count him out. So the three keys all occurred as a result of the terrible response to the pandemic and to the cries for social and racial justice. And never in the history of the United States has any sitting president suffered such a sudden and dramatic reversal of fortune. And although Trump loves to deflect and distract, he has no one to blame but himself. As Harry Truman said, when it comes to the presidency, the buck stops here.
Alan Lichtman, American University Distinguished Professor of History, more well known as that professor who can accurately call the winner of presidential elections since 1984 and running. We're spending the hour with him and with your thoughts as well. We'll be back after a news update with Alan Lichtman here on the Ideas Network. The orderly transfer of power has been a bedrock of American democracy from our founding. So now what? How do you feel about the legal fights and obstruction? It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Be part of this conversation, 800-642-1234. We have American University Distinguished Professor of History, Alan Lichtman, as our guide. Mary is joining us from Pewaukee with thoughts on what she's seeing around the country. Mary, hi.
Yes. Hi. Good morning. Yes, the great Alan Lichtman. I've heard you on NPR before, and by the way, I have read that NPR is very factual, slightly leaning to the left, but that's probably because of the facts. And I have two things. One is, does Mr. Lichtman, the guest, feel that this is a cult? Because I cannot fathom. Over a third of the people voting for someone like this that, you know, they've seen the lies, they've seen the actions and corruption in 4 years. And the second thing that I'd like a comment on, please, is that, what was the other thing I was going to ask? Getting all wound up with myself.
No, that's
here.
Okay, Mary. Is it something to the effect of will we see more candidates
person like Trump with that same, people call it charisma, I call it evil, but yes, in the next, 4 or 8 years that the Republicans are hoping for someone else like this that has the personality of a Trump.
Well, let's let Alan jump in here.
Yeah, I think it's important. Although, I certainly agree with your criticisms of the way Trump has behaved, that we listen to the Trump voters. Over 70 million people, voters, voted for Donald Trump. They didn't just do it because they were deceived or tricked. Somehow Donald Trump has spoken to a minority, but a very substantial minority of Americans who I think are fearful about a lot of the changes that they see occurring in their society, changes in our demography, in our cultural attitudes, in the nature of our economy, which has left people without college degrees behind. It's really important that President Biden and the Democrats listen to the concerns of these people and address those concerns and not simply dismiss this huge swath of Americana as folks being duped by Donald Trump.
Going on to see if we will have, as Mary was wondering, will we have more people, will the Republican Party look more like a President Trump with that type of ethic in the future?
I'm afraid that's very possible. Republican Party did very well, actually, at elections below that of the presidency. So maybe there is some glimmer of hope that it will move in a different direction. But the Republican Party also has to reckon with the post-Trump era because Trump has basically destroyed virtually every principle the Republican Party has professed to stand for. Personal morality, personal responsibility, a joke. Respect for traditional institutions, states' rights, fiscal responsibility, limited government, all gone under Trump. So the Republican Party does have a reckoning to do in terms of what principles the Republican Party does represent.
Let's bring in Frank in La Crosse. Frank, hi. What are your thoughts?
Hello. I'd like the professor's estimate or prediction on what's going to happen to Mr. Trump and his various cohorts relative to his finances, the emoluments clause, all the various lawsuits that are going to keep him pretty busy, whether there's a special counsel that's going to be put in charge of this to keep it a little less political. So what is Mr. Trump's future? And I don't think it's going to be running for office in 4 years.
And, you know, one of those things that came up during this election, of course, was the president's tax returns, Alan.
Yes, and he's the only modern president not to release his tax returns. And his excuse that they're under audit is bogus. First of all, he's got decades of tax returns that aren't under audit. And secondly, there's no prohibition about releasing tax returns that are under audit. But it looks like the prosecutors in the state of New York are going to get his financial records, including his tax returns, and prosecutors elsewhere may get them as well. Even as president, his rationale for keeping those from the hands of prosecutors was shot down by the Supreme Court. And of course, once he becomes a private citizen, he'll have no protections at all. But in the future, I think it's really important that Congress passes a law requiring all presidential candidates, or at least those nominated as presidential candidates, to release their tax returns. We should never again be in the dark the way we have been with respect to Trump's finances.
We're talking with Alan Lichtman, Distinguished Professor of History at American University, looking at the election of 2020 and getting Alan's predictions of what are to come and the historical context of what has happened before in presidential transitions of power, taking your calls and your thoughts on this as well at 800-642-1234. Alan, your thoughts on the Electoral College in this situation. The Electoral College has gotten lots of criticism over how we send a person to the White House. Is it here to stay?
Well, the criticism is justified. You know, we're the world's longest running democracy, and that's terrific because we have strong democratic institutions that I'm confident will even survive Donald Trump's attack on them. But we're also saddled with 18th century obsolete institutions, the worst of which is the Electoral College. When the Electoral College was set up, the gap between the most and least populous states for free persons was about 5-1. Today, it's approaching 70-1. States like Wyoming and Alaska, by population, should not get 3, but only 1 Electoral College votes. California should get maybe 10 more. So the Electoral College tremendously distorts the verdict of the people. We are no longer governed by the consent of the governing. It also very much favors inherently Republicans whose votes are more spread out. Democratic votes are more concentrated in populous states like New York and California. Republicans have only won 1 popular vote since 1992 once, but have, of course, been elected to the presidency 3 times. So it's time that we restore the ideal of governing by the consent of the governed and eliminate the Electoral College, but it's very difficult to do. To get a constitutional amendment, you need 2/3 vote of both houses. 3/4 of the states have to ratify, and the small states certainly have no incentive to eliminate the Electoral College. So I'm afraid it may be here for some time. But Justice Brandeis, the late, great Justice Brandeis, once said, most of the things worth doing seemed impossible to do at the time. And who would have thought 20 years ago, gay marriage today would be the law of the land? So seemingly impossible things can be achieved.
Let's bring in Mark now, joining us from Appleton. Hi, Mark.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'm very concerned about the fact that President-elect Biden is not getting briefings and things. But I do wonder whether perhaps it's better to let Trump have this this time to make all these suits, even though they're frivolous, so that they can be thrown out in court and at least convince some people who think the election was fraudulent that it wasn't, and that if we stopped the suits or acted like they weren't happening, it might even be worse. So perhaps the Republicans, spineless as they really are, by not declaring Biden the winner and letting Trump have his day in court, as it were, that might be better for all of us because it will maybe convince people of the legality of the election.
So Mark's saying, let the lawsuits play out, let them happen, let the recounts happen, Alan.
Well, very shrewd comments, but there's two different things. One is the lawsuits, the other is the transition. You could still provide Biden the national security briefings and have the normal transition process, which is always begun once the election is called by all the various outlets that do this. That was done in 2016. Obama even invited Trump to the White House. That doesn't stop the lawsuits. The lawsuits can still continue. There's a myth that the two are tied together. But let me also say, Trump's strategy goes way beyond the lawsuits. He doesn't expect to win these lawsuits, but he's going to claim what? It's the deep state, again, preventing him from getting what he is due. It doesn't matter that he loses all of these lawsuits. He is going to claim it's all part of the swamp, all part of the deep state conspiracy against him.
What was it like in 2000 as Democrat Al Gore gave a speech after the Supreme Court decided his race and that it would go to George W. Bush?
Yeah, that was quite extraordinary. It's totally different from what's going on today with this scattershot dozens of lawsuits all over the country. In 2000, it had to go to the courts because no one knew who won Florida. Just a few hundred votes were separating out. And rather than issuing complaints and grievances, and he had some real grievance, my own study for the United States Commission on Civil Rights indicated that Gore, in fact, should have won that election. But leave that aside, he gave an incredibly gracious, uplifting speech supporting the traditions of our democracy. I thought it was a better speech than anything he had given actually during the campaign itself, and it really helped bring the nation together after more than a month of intense controversy.
We're talking with American University presidential historian Alan Lichtman on the legacy of President Trump, what he sees now, what the history books will say. We will be back in a minute. More conversation here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with American University distinguished presidential historian Alan Lichtman. He's weighing in on this moment in America when President Trump refuses to concede. Let's bring in Howard in Duluth, who's a libertarian with thoughts on this election. Howard, hi.
Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Well, I apologize. I know this is a bit tangential from the topic, but it sounds like you've got a gentleman on the air there who's a lot more into political science than me. I guess I'm closest to being a libertarian person. It happens to be how I voted this time around. And I know, in reality, we're never going to end up with a libertarian president or any minor party president. Just kind of wondering, in his eye, for people in my kind of a position, do we end up really having any impact on policies in the future of the nation?
Great point. We're not going to have a libertarian president, I'm sorry to tell you. But third parties have had an impact in that they have been recruitment grounds for the major party. Look at the Ron and Rand Paul, for example, in the Republican Party. They have deep libertarian traditions, and they have propagated ideas that have been co-opted by the major parties. For example, the idea of outsourcing a lot of government services. Originally,
began within libertarian ranks and then became picked up by Republicans. So don't despair. You can have some influence.
Howard, thank you. Jim now in River Falls. Jim, hi.
Good morning. Thanks for the program. Yeah, I'm just finishing up a book, How Fascism Works by Jason Stanley. And I guess my concern is, you know, is this country becoming more fascist in the way it's functioning? I mean, I think if Trump weren't such a buffoon and, you know, hadn't screwed things up so badly, he would have been reelected. And, you know, and then he wanted to keep running, you know, for a third term and beyond. And just the playbook that he uses is straight out of Hitler's playbook.
Jim,
so
let's,
that's a major concern.
Yeah, let's let Alan here respond to what Jim is saying here in terms of fascism and what he sees.
Yeah, I'm always loath to compare anyone to Hitler. I tend to avoid that. But I think the caller has some good points. There are very strong autocratic tendencies in Donald Trump. His use of the big lie, the favorite tactic of dictators, his politicization of the entire federal government, his belief that the Department of Justice represents his own personal law firm, his explicit statement that he made several times that under the Constitution he can do anything he wants, his stonewalling of congressional investigations. This is all extremely dangerous. And I do think in this election, we may have avoided a real confrontation over our democracy. So I can say the voice of the people spoke, and they rejected this dangerous approach to government.
Let's bring in Garrett in Harshaw. Garrett, hi, what's on your mind?
Hi, I'm a veteran, and we just had Veterans Day, and I find it shameful that Republican lawmakers are thanking us for our service, but yet they remain mum when Russia puts bounties on our service members' heads and these lawmakers prop up the president. They should be asking questions about this. That's all I really got to say.
Yeah, you put your finger on something very important in that as I explained before, because Trump has basically abrogated the principles the Republican Party has professed to stand for, Trump remains all they have. And all of these enablers within the Republican Party are afraid to challenge the president, even on something as reprehensible as his failure to stand up to Vladimir Putin when there is at least reasonable intelligence that he's putting bounties on the heads of American soldiers. Even if there was a slightest suspicion of that, that is something that the president should have stood up for, should have stood up for our troops and challenged Putin, and he never did it.
We're talking with Alan Lichtman, a distinguished professor of history at American University. We're looking at the state of the presidency with your thoughts as well at 800-642-1234. Alan, I know that you're not one who likes to look at the polls and is concerned about national polling in America, state polling in America. Polls were quite off. There was not a blue wave. What can you tell us about polling?
First, I would say to you and my other friends in journalism, never again comment or report on a horse race poll. They are misleading and detrimental. Look, there are inherent problems with polls. One, they are not predictors. They are snapshots, and those snapshots change. And how do you know they change? You keep taking polls until you hit the election. They're abused as predictors. Secondly, the error margins are vastly greater than they would have you believe. This plus and minus 3%, that's pure statistical sampling error. Doesn't take into account errors from non-response, errors from false responses, and most critically, errors from estimating the likely voters. Both in 2016 and 2020, the pollsters vastly estimated the Trump likely voters, and thus their polls were terribly inaccurate. You know, they promised us after the errors of 2016 that they would fix it for 2020, and the errors were even larger. These problems are not fixable.
don't believe the polls. We don't need them. They don't add a thing except misinformation, and they may even distort turnout as
but
people
polling,
may decide
polling,
to vote or not based on the polls.
Yeah, but polling is an industry. It's not going anywhere. So what can be done to help remedy what is going on in this industry?
You journalists can remedy it by not reporting or commenting on the polls. You're not forced to do it. No one's twisting your arms. Don't do it. And I'm not against polling. There's lots of useful things polling can do for us. I am against horse race polling. That's where the error comes in. All the rest of the polling is just fine. And it's not the pollsters' fault. They're doing the best they can. The problems with horse race polling are inherent to the enterprise. But you journalists can stop it.
What will President Trump's legacy be as president? What will be in his presidential library?
Certainly that he was the most unprecedented, least traditional president in history, that he smashed so many norms of American democracy and American politics. But I also think he will be found guilty of the greatest dereliction of duty in the history of the presidency, and that is knowingly and willfully failing to adequately deal with the worst pandemic in 100 years. He knew how deadly it was. He knew it was spread through the air. He lied to the American people, never developed a strategy. I just heard on your air a few minutes ago the first responders saying they still don't even have the equipment and the masks they need. We still don't have a national strategy. We still don't have a president engaged with dealing with the pandemic. And that is the worst dereliction of duty in presidential history. It's cost us maybe more than 100,000 lives and millions of infections. We will also, I think the legacy will also be, we have never had a president before who made lying a hallmark of his administration and who launched such a concerted attack on the most important traditions of American democracy and sowed divisions among us rather than tried to heal them.
We only have a couple seconds left here, Alan. I want to just find out from you, what are you watching for in these days leading up to Inauguration Day?
I'm watching for the Biden to get the national security information that they need. Otherwise, our national security will be in jeopardy. And I'm watching to see whether the president will ultimately concede or will simply claim until January 20th, 2021 and beyond that he really won, was cheated out of it, and will continue to monger these grievances.
Alan, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
Alan Lichtman is a distinguished professor of history at American University, successfully called every presidential election since 1984. Just ahead, it is 1A. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.